Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday afternoon show, and this being the, well, it's hard to say it's the football season because baseball is still very much with us, the playoffs and then the World Series, but you find that in most sports today, sports overlap. The seasons are so long that they all run into one another. Anyway, we have a real football expert here today, an old and very dear friend of mine, and one of the great quarterbacks of all time, Sid Luckman. And we'll be talking football with Sid, and he knows it as well as anybody. And we'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have Sid Luckman, one of the all-time great quarterbacks in college and as a pro, as our guest today. And, of course, he stays very close to George Halas and the doings of the Bears because that's where his heart is in football. Right, Sid?
That certainly has been that for many, many years, Bob. And I'm just sure the Bears are going to do a lot better job in the next few weeks than they've done in the past 3 weeks. It's just been one very tough situation losing the last three games. But I do feel, Bob, that the Bears have some outstanding football players, some wonderful talent. And as I've stated before, they can still win the Western Division Championship.
Some of the sports writers say that, differing from the quarterbacks of today with the Bears, that you came out of Columbia, and when you came into the pro game, you already were a great quarterback. And you worked under George Halas, who's got a great football mind, and maybe you had a lot going for you that some of these young quarterbacks today don't have.
Bob, I think that natural ability is a thing that somehow will always prevail, and I can't say that I was a great quarterback. I think that what I tried to do and what I really was my supreme effort was to really work at it. I really did work very diligently after practice. I stayed after practice and worked for an hour, 2 hours a day. I studied my plays every night. But I do want to say, Bob, not talking about myself, that these boys today have such God-given talent. It's amazing that they come out there. They're fast. They're big. They're strong. They can throw the ball. And I just think that any quarterback today is just a super athlete. The only thing that's happening is the boys they're playing against are so big and strong and so dedicated to the game that the game is a little rough and it's hard on these boys to show their tremendous ability.
Well, do you really feel that the truly great quarterbacks like yourself and, let's say, Bart Starr and a few of these others, these fellows are born with this talent? There are a lot of people that have the opinion that they don't develop it. They're born with it.
Well, a lot of that is true. But again, Bob, you may be born with it, but you really have to work at it and to come out. And I can well remember talking to some of these quarterbacks who have been friends of mine over the years, the way they would work 11, 12 months a year just throwing the ball. Of course, you have to have the talent to start with. As you state, that's the big thing. And, of course, then you have to develop it by hard, diligent work. But you are gifted, and that's one of the nice things about being an athlete, that God has given you that tremendous gift, and then you have to utilize it. And it's a given sin when you have that talent and don't utilize it to the best of your ability.
Sid, if you take the factors that make a quarterback a great quarterback, how would you list them? There are four or five things. One, he has to be able to maneuver. He has to be able to move, right?
Well, speed is it's not so much straight-ahead speed as it is quickness and agility and being able to move back from under the center and then, of course, getting back into position. When he's then rushed, he has to be able to move from side to side and elude or evade the people who are rushing him. That is one of the most important factors in a quarterback's ability. The second ability, of course, and the most important is to be able to really pass the ball. If you're a great passer, that compensates for almost anything else that you can do, because if you can move a team down by passing, that helps tremendously in the team scoring, and that's primarily what we're trying to do.
Sid, what about the thing that you had, quick release?
Well, again, that takes a lot of effort and time, and that can be developed very quickly. Not to be talking about myself, but I did coach at Notre Dame for many years, 5 years. I coached at West Point, and what we had the boys do was get on one knee and practice just catching the ball and releasing it quickly from the behind the neck or right next to the ear, and that can be done. It takes hours and hours of actual practice, but quick release is something that can be developed. It isn't something that you're born with. That is something that by hard work you can certainly compensate and be able to do.
Sid, what do you recall about a few of the football philosophies of a guy we both love, George Halas?
Oh, George Halas was a man that was an enigma. He was a man that was absolutely, probably, without a doubt, the greatest football coach of all times. He was a man that lived football. He worked 18, 20 hours a day at it. His whole life was the perfection of the T-formation. And when we started and we worked on the T-formation, I can tell you without any equivocation that I told him, I says, Coach, we're making a really radical mistake. It should not be the T-formation. It should be the Halas formation. You designed it. You worked on it like the Rockne system in the old days. I said, Coach, this is your idea. This is your dream. This is your fulfillment of what you started when you started professional football. But he was a man that was dedicated to the game. He was a man that understood the psychology and philosophy of human beings. He's a man also that understood that you had to be able to handle men, and he knew how to handle us. For example, in the 73-0 game when we won the World Championship, I will never forget the tremendous philosophy in that. And it's in the book called Halas by Halas, which is one of the most fabulous football or any sports books that's ever been written. But in that particular game, we had lost 7-3, and they had beaten us, and we had run up and down the field, but we sort of got every bad break. Well, instead of giving us a pep talk, which Coach Halas usually or people didn't to inspire you, he had headlines around the paper of around the dressing room of all the newspapers, where the owner of the Washington Redskins, George Marshall, had called us crybabies and only a first half team, which was very interesting, Bob, because we really were not that at all. And I've never heard Halas cry about defeat. I never heard him ever complain. But in that particular game, he was very upset at what had happened when they officiated the game. Well, instead of giving us this particular pep talk, he just turned around and said, here are what the people of Washington think about you. Are you crybabies? Are you a football team that is a first half team? He said, let me tell you what I really believe. He said, I believe you're the greatest football team that's ever been assembled. I believe that when you get finished with this game, you will prove to the world and to the sports people of America that this has been the greatest football team that's ever been assembled. And with that, his inspirational talk, the way he did it, it wasn't so much. It was the way he did things, the way he inspired you, it was his intonation of his voice, the clapping of his hand, the inspiration that he brought to all of us that made us the great football teams that we were. And I wanted to say one thing. Many people have told me and asked me over the years, what is the greatest thrill you've ever had in football? I'm going to tell you my greatest thrill, Bob. The greatest thrill I've ever had in football was just to be associated with George Halas, just to be associated with a man whose greatness and kindness, I hope, has rubbed off on me, because I just want to say this, and I know you feel the same way. There never was a man in my life or anyone's life that I could ever think any more of, that any one of us have ever thought any more of than George Halas. He was an inspiration to me, he always will be, and to me, he has made the game of professional football what it is today.
Well, he certainly has. I'm looking forward to interviewing him Tuesday, and he'll be on this show next Saturday, and I can hardly wait for Tuesday to start in on him. You mentioned Rockne, and you mentioned Halas and the T. What was the difference? Rockne had the shift with the T?
No, Rockne had the Rockne system, which was a single wing formation with the two backs back. Coach Halas was the first one to ever use the T formation with the quarterback under the center. And if you remember, we won 73-0, and Clark Shaughnessy was coaching Stanford. And he helped us install the T formation and worked very hard and very diligently with our team and with Coach Halas. And he went on to coach Stanford in the Rose Bowl victory. And after that, every team in the United States just wanted to copy the T formation. And that's when Coach Halas said to all of us, and particularly to me, because I wasn't sort of involved in the T formation, being the quarterback on that team, that he wanted me to travel around the country and try to help other schools. And that's when I went on to different colleges around the country with his blessings, and we helped install the T formation. But that was the main difference, Bob, in that we were the only team in the whole United States using the T formation, which was fundamentally the Halas formation. And then, of course, today, everybody in every walk of every high school, college, Sandlot Pro uses the Halas formation.
Did a great football man, a great football mind, Pop Warner, have any influence on your career?
Well, Pop Warner was, he used the Warner system, which was the double wing, as you know. I would have to say, really, I admired him tremendously, Bob, but as far as my ever partaking or having anything to do with him personally, he was a little bit before my time, but I always did admire the man and thought a lot of his football ability. He was actually a genius in his field.
I know that you follow the Bear games closely. If you were the quarterback coach today, what are your feelings about their quarterbacks?
Well, I really believe that those boys, all of them, have tremendous ability. I think that the calling of the plays, in some respects, I think, in my opinion, hurts any football team, whether it be the Bears
or
anything.
You mean to send the plays in from the sideline?
Yes. I just think that if a man doesn't have the brains and ability when he becomes a pro to call his own plays, I think that's a very sad situation. I do feel, excuse me, Bob, that in the course of a game, a quarterback gets the feel. He should know exactly what to do. He gets his help from his teammates. The plays coming in, I think, take away some of the beauty of the game and the feel for the game. And as far as the Bear quarterbacks, every single one of them are very intelligent young men. I've met them all. I've been around them. I've been have occasion to spend some time with them. And each one of them really have a really tremendous capacity to lead the Bears, I honestly believe, to a Super Bowl championship. A lot of it depends upon the help they receive, upon the players they surround themselves with, upon the help of the coaches, the offensive coordinator, and that, of course, is the main thing that's involved in the Bears situation.
Sid, how do you feel about throwing on first down?
Bob, I am definitely a man that believes in attack. I do not believe that you can sit back in this day and age and allow yourselves the luxury of running on first down and running on second down and passing on third down. I've watched some of these great teams, and I went to the Super Bowl last year and watched the game very, very carefully, and I watched Terry Bradshaw passing on first down and passing on second down, and I saw them run for 50 yards and throw the ball for 350 yards. I watched the game the other day between Green Bay and New England. Bob, the day of conservatism in football is gone. This is the day of opening up the offense. This is the day of the reincarnation of the quarterbacks. They brought them back. The National Football League owners and managers got together, and they've changed the rules. They made it possible for the quarterback to have 4.1 seconds instead of 3.1 because they allowed the offensive linemen to use their hands. The wide receivers can only be bumped once within the 5-yard line, meaning they can go down the field 10 yards further than they normally could. A quarterback can only be hit once. The referee blows the whistle. In other words, it really has been the day of the quarterback. The day of the conservatism and the running is all fine. But if I was playing today, to answer your question, Bob, I honestly think that I would protect myself and throw on first down when they least expected it. It's a game of outsmarting the opponents or outthinking him, and that's what I think every offensive football-minded coach has to do.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him as an old friend, one of the great quarterbacks of all time, Sid Luckman of the Bears. We'll be back with our guest in just a minute. We're delighted to have Sid Luckman, one of the great quarterbacks of all time and quarterback with the Bears for many, many years as our guest today. He's one of the real nice people in athletics, and he and I have been very close friends for a long time, and I really value his friendship. I think I could wake this guy up at 3 in the morning and ask him to be on a show, and he'd be sitting right here.
Thank you, Bob. I'm not concerned about your wonderful show. I'm more concerned about the relationship we've built up over the years. Bob, you could ask me to go anywhere, and you know I would be there because, as you stated, it's all there is in this world is friendship. And you know, Bob, I've admired you, I've valued your friendship, and I mean this from the depths of my heart. You're one of the truly nicest human beings that Sid Luckman has ever had the pleasure of knowing.
Well, that's very, very nice, and I certainly appreciate that. You know, you mentioned that game the other night, and that was really an upset. That was a new Green Bay that came out against New England.
Bob, and to the folks who are listening, I can only say one thing. Football is a game of emotion. Football is a game of where men today are big and strong and they're fabulous athletes. They're really the gifted men of this generation. They're like the Roman gladiators and warriors of old who were the people that were gifted. I can only say that on any given day, on any given night, any football team who arises to the occasion can beat any other team. It depends upon the emotional buildup given by the coaches, and that was one of the things that Halas could do, Lombardi could do, Leahy could do. You're talking about living legends. They're the men that can inspire you to greatness, make you go out on that field, just breaking down the door to get on that field to do the job that you had to do. And that was the big thing about professional football, and that's why Bart Starr built this team up to a tremendous emotional pitch, and it was a shocking and surprising thing to many people that see New England so overpowered and so beaten, I mean, like they were the other night. It was just almost incredible in the minds of most people because Green Bay just hadn't been able to score, and all of a sudden they went out there and they would just put three men in the hospital. They score, they threw the ball. And you talk about attack, Bob, the question you asked me before. The score was 27-14. They had the ball on their own, on 47-yard line, on fourth down. They went for it. They did not kick the ball. They were there to win. They were not there to lose. And they did not make it. But again, they had the ball, was 27-14 on their own 20-yard line. And they passed on first down. You just can't sit back and let the other teams catch you. You've got to permit yourself, Bob, the luxury of going out and trying to attack and win.
Sid, I've wondered many times, and I don't profess to know anything about football the way you do, but you see, even in the first quarter, here's a game between two pro teams. They got a fourth and four. They're on the four, their opponent's 4 yard line. Boom, 3 points. Why don't they go for it? And if they miss it, they got them locked up there on the go. I never can understand that.
Bob, it's a very simple thing that I have learned and all of us have learned over the years. If you have fourth and four, and you're trying to score, the chances of, you got to go by percentage. How many times will you score from the 4 yard line on fourth down? I'm talking about a touchdown. You got to look at the percentages, the statistics, what your team or what you feel your team can do. The whole basis of football is to get on the scoreboard and try to score when you can. And you have to score. You cannot march the length of a field, Bob, and come out empty-handed. Of course, it is so much better to score a touchdown and have 7 points. But you cannot go out empty-handed. You've got to get on that scoreboard. You've got to get some points up there because later on in the game, those 3 points can mean so much. Again, it depends upon the situation, what the score is, what the timing is, what you feel you have the potential to be able to accomplish, and that's the important thing in football.
Why do you suppose that we know that Paul Brown, like Halas, had a great football mind? Everybody agreed with that. And still, when he had a great quarterback like Otto Graham, who you said many times was one of the greats that you've seen, he sent in all the plays.
Again, I can never understand that. That was against all of Halas's principles. He said if the quarterback did not have the capacity to think, he doesn't deserve to be in there playing professional football. Again, it's a question of what the coaches think and what they feel. You can rest assured that Otto Graham could have called his own plays, but Paul Brown must have felt that he knew more about what was going on. He knew more about the situation as far as the teams. He knew more about what the defense was doing, and he felt that he could handle a lot better than Otto Graham. But if you recall, Bob, Otto Graham many, many times said he would have liked to have called his own signals, that he thought he would prefer to play football that way.
And a very good friend of mine told me that they didn't have an ironclad rule, that they would send a play in, and if Otto Graham didn't like it, he'd call something else.
Yes, he had that. It was in his prerogative to change the play if he thought it advisable to do so. In other words, he could audible, he could change it if he thought the situation was such that he didn't believe the play would work. But again, he did not do that too often, Bob, because that was against Paul Brown's principles.
What do you recall from your old college coach who had a great name in football, Lou Little? Well, what about a few of his philosophies?
Lou Little's main philosophy was to give us an education and try to teach us to learn up to be men. And, of course, he watched our studies. Columbia University was a very, very difficult school, as you know, academically, and you had to get some good grades there. And he was dedicated to our being educated and becoming lawyers and doctors and whatever and business people. But he also was one of the outstanding strategic minds and one of the truly finest gentlemen I have ever known.
What was the personnel-wise the best backfield that you played on, the four fellas? You were the quarterback. Who else?
Well, we had a fabulous team. Not so long ago, the people in Boston had a dinner and asked us to come back with what they felt, and again, it'd be their opinion as well. And Coach Halas also thought the four best football players assembled was George McAfee at halfback, Ray Nolte at the other halfback, and Bill Osmanski at fullback. Coach Hallis felt that was the best team because that was a team that won the 73-0 game and went on to many, many victories after that. That was a fine football team. You know what made that team? People ask, why was that team so successful? Why were they called the Monsters of the Midway? It was the real loyalty and feeling we had for one another. The team was so inspired. The players just respected each other and loved each other. It wasn't one guy for himself. It was a philosophy of all for one and one for all that made that team. And again, you know, a long time ago, my daddy always said a fish always smelled from the head down, not the tails up. The same with a businessman or any corporation or any football team. It permeates from the top as to how successful the team is going to be, and that's where most football teams are successful. It's what the coach teaches you. It's his knowledge of the game. It's his calling of the plays, or his, if he does that, or his being able to attack a defense and knowing and bringing that feeling into the team that when they walk on the field, they feel that utmost confidence that they can do anything and can do anything against any team they partake or participate against.
Sid, how long does it take the average pro quarterback to learn to read a defense?
Bob,
what do you look for first?
Well, actually, when you come up to the line of scrimmage, you look and see what formation they're in. You see what if they're in a three-man line or four-man line. You can do that as you walk up to the line of scrimmage. You also then scan the back of them and see how they're lining up their backs, how far they're playing. Then when you call the signals and they're sending men in motion, you then look over and see how they're covering the men in motion. You look and see when you go back to pass if they're in a zone defense, a nickel defense, a vex defense, whatever the zone, whatever they may be in. And then you pick up from that as to the plays you think should call, be called. Also, when you go back, you get a peripheral vision of the defense, and you should be able to then go to the one man rather than the man's being covered by two men. And you can pick this up in the length of time it should normally take, I should think, would be almost in the middle of the first season. But, of course, you're looking at thousands of hours of football. You're looking at thousands of hours of movies. You should know, and you should be able to pick that up very soon.
Sid, what would you say, based on your long experience, is the toughest defense to throw into?
Well, if you're throwing on third down, and they've got seven or eight men back there, or they're coming in with seven or eight men on a red dog, and they're bringing the free safety in, and the linebacker's in, and they're red dogging, that's a difficult situation. Therefore, you try to do think of what they're going to do, and you try to believe in your heart that what are they going to do on this situation. And if you know what they're going to do, you call a play. If it's a seven-man rush, which you anticipate, you keep the back in there. If they're going to have a three-man line, you check the back down, and you have them in the flat or over the center. There's so many different things that can be done if you have an idea of what they're going to do by watching them and watching the thousands and thousands of hours of defense that you're going to be playing against with these teams and the teams you're going to be playing against. So it can be any kind of defense, but you should know that it's very difficult to throw into eight men back there when they're rushing three. It's a difficult situation. You're only sending five men down the field, Bob. They've got eight men to cover those five men. Or if they're blocking, you only got five men or six men blocking, and they're coming in with seven men, that's an awful tough thing when you got someone knocking you down to throw in there. Well, it's a rough situation, Bob. And those big guys can hurt you. Believe me, they can.
I can feel it right here. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, one of the all-time great quarterbacks and a great guy with it, Sid Luckman of the Bears. Real pleasure having him. We'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have Sid Luckman, great quarterback of the Bears and one of the all-time great quarterbacks, as our guest. Next Saturday, we'll be talking football with his coach, a guy we both love, George Hallis, who's really been the backbone of professional football. And when I think of him, I think of the beginning of pro football.
Bob, I can only tell you that when 100 million people watch TV on a given day, a Super Bowl day, a Monday night, on a Sunday, you have to say this is the man that had the vision and the foresight and the ability to know that his dream would come true, and his dream did come true. I can remember in his book, he'll tell you in Hallis by Hallis, how in that particular book he started, there were 100 people, two, and they were giving tickets away. They were paying people to come to the game. But he always, in the times of distress and bankruptcy that some of the teams were going through, and he was having his problems in the early 30s, this man said, someday this game will take hold. And by goodness, it did take hold. And I can only say one thing. He had the vision, and he had the heart to do this and live with it. And only his sight and only his vision has made it possible for American football and American professional football to be what it is today.
Sid, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Bob, I want to thank you for having me. As you know, you stated before that I would be here. Bob, I would not only be here, we've been friends. I've watched your career. I've watched you in the Hall of Fame. And it's an honor and privilege for me to be here with you today. And thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all the blessed things you've said about me today. I'm ever grateful, Bob. And I do appreciate your having me.
Thank you, Sid. One of the all-time great quarterbacks. And he really was. And he looks good enough so that he could almost play today. But I'd hate to have him getting knocked around out there. Anyway, we've enjoyed very much having Sid as our guest today, a very dear friend of mine. And remember, next Saturday we'll be talking football with the master of them all, George Halas. Have a happy weekend. Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.